It's showtime.
Well, I moved into the wrong microphone. That was supposed to begin with, and then it's showtime. And then, yes, indeed it is. It is the seventh day of December 2021. Let's see, 70 years. Is it 70 years? Eighty years. It is 80 years to the day since the attacks on Pearl Harbor that propelled the United States into the Second World War, and certainly changed the world as we knew it on an individual basis and on a global basis. So I hope folks maybe took a moment to think about the yawning gates of hell that opened on that day so very long ago. Time to make that. I keep forgetting that because of the setup here now, I have to turn off the sound effects from the chat room each and every day to keep those boop, bloop, bloop from, speaking of the chat room, if you'd like to be part of the Merry, Wacky, Madcap, Zany, Real-Time Multimedia Extravaganza, by all means, run on over to headon.live and pop in and check out the chat room, pick out a screen name and a password. If you do right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Otto DeShot and Roger and Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and of course, capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, is not folding space today because he's running a scan on the man cave computer. Right. But pop on by. The conversation is fine. It is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. A gentle reminder that the name of what we do on Tuesdays comes from something that happened a very long time ago now. Long, long time ago, when the right-wing monotone who did mornings in America's fifth smallest radio market took a call from someone who said, "Steve, how come it is that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I seed them when I was in the coal mines. We ain't nowhere near the beach." And Titanic Tuesday got its name when Steve responded, "Well, caller," and I'm putting way too much emphasis in that. "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." And from that day to this, Tuesdays have been a day for noting Titanic right-wing intellect on this program. And, well, the kind of intellect that sends you rushing to the bridge to see the iceberg in the distance and scream, "Flank speed! We're going to smash the shit out of that iceberg and we're all going to have ice in our cocktails come evening." Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, we know what happens. Right. And so we've got some Titanic intellect this evening. Well, good for you. Otto DeShot says, "Finally recovered from the second shingles vaccine shot." Frank! Mm-hmm. So Otto is fully vaccinated against shingles. And you know what? Whatever side effects you had from that vaccine are not a tenth, not a hundredth, not a thousandth of the agonies that come with having shingles. So congratulations on having gotten that vaccine, Otto. Did I do the "Hi, I'm Robin" part? Because I am. And like I mentioned last night, today is a big day for me. Today is officially 4 weeks post-op for me. This past Sunday was 3 weeks out of the hospital. The surgery took place on Tuesday, November the 9th, and this is 4 weeks to the day from when they did the amazing work that let me feel like me for the first time in my life. And I remain absolutely grateful to the surgical team who were able to accomplish that that secular miracle. Mm-hmm. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we have thanks to send out to our seventh day of the month subscribers. And that means thank you very kindly to James. Thank you, James, so much. James is our one and only subscriber for the seventh day of the month. Thank you, James. And I have bad news. We closed the program with $167 to go on Randy Radar's Merry Christmas to the Horn Challenge, or $157, I'm sorry, $157 to go. And I know, you know, the overnight crew downloaded their stuff, but you never know when people listen to things. So we pulled up $157 short on that challenge. But still, that's a considerable chunk of matching money, and it's a tremendous help as we go forward trying to make sure that everything keeps running between now and the time that Annette and I are able to finally go home. So thank you very kindly to Randy Radar for that generous act on his part. It helps tremendously in, and I guess what it boils down to then is that we did manage to wipe out last November's fundraising that we were off by. So now we can just think about the $600 or so that we are short for catching up even with this, the seventh day of December. So thank you. Thank you, Randy, and thanks to everybody who responded. Thank you so kindly indeed. And just a general reminder, if you want to help out, the PayPal interface is right there at headon.live. It's real easy. If you go to the Contribute tab, there's a link to becoming a Patreon subscriber. Someday maybe we'll add a Bitcoin wallet and Venmo and stuff like that. I don't know how much of a pain in the ass that would be for Brother Deacon Asick, because he lives a life and has a world of his own, and I try not to lean on him too much for stuff like that. That's, you know, that's where things stand. Made it through 3 hours of programming last night. I will not lie. By the time it was over, I was really, really sore. Because I just can't sit for extended periods of time like I used to. And by the way, this is a secret message for Scary Jerry. I hope you're listening, Jerry. You remember the other night when we were talking about Delta 8 CBD? And you remember how you said it was really good for nerve pain? And you remember how you said that, well, Delta 8 will give you a buzz, but that's only if you use a whole bunch of it. Well, like I said, yesterday I went to the CBD store. I got some Delta 8 gummies. They were 25 milligrams per gummy. And they also had Delta 9 gummies, and I got some of those too. Well, last night, being, you know, not wanting to be injudicious, and the label directions said no more than one every 6 hours, as we got toward bedtime, you know, probably a couple of hours before bedtime, because we watched some TV and had dinner and stuff. But I opened up the little tub of Delta 8 gummies and picked out a likely looking one. It was orange. Turned out it was mango flavored, and it was really, really good. Tasty, wonderful flavor. Didn't have any skanky-ass bong water flavor or even weed flavor, for that matter. And chewed up the gummy, kind of let it linger and melt a little bit and stuff like that, and swallowed it and thought no more of it. And then we had dinner, and Annette and I watched an episode of The Great. That is a brutal, bloody thing for a comedy, The Great, but absolutely watchable, and, well, huzzah. But we got done with dinner, and I got up to go to the kitchen, And I realized that I had tied into our dinner with a real vigor, a real verve. I hadn't felt hungry like that in a while. But then I realized upon arising, well, I just looked at Annette and said, "I'll be damned." She said, "What?" I said, "I'm high as shit." She said, "How could that be possible?" I said, "I don't know, but I am." And it was like it was a sativa high, too, because it was a head high. And, you know, next thing I knew, I was delving miles deep into my own mind and eating like a woman possessed along the way, too. Hey, oh, that's a new tub of ice cream. Let me get the spoon. Never mind the bowl. This is just the two of us. And, yeah, I had Scary Jerry. I didn't. One stupid gummy, and I was high. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'm going to do that again, especially this, because like I said, it was a head high. Maybe this evening I think I'm going to try a quarter of one of the Delta 9 Indica gummies, because the other thing, the other part of it is that son of a gun, Scary Jerry was not lying. It worked real good on the nerve pain. It worked real good on any pain I had anywhere in my body. I mean, if I had toenail pain, it would have worked on it. If there was a tiny little twinge at the end of some little random hair somewhere, this thing would have shut it down. It was good stuff. But I've just kind of gotten used to, once upon a time, but this is not then. And I'm really lightweight, as Stockton Leary points out in the chat room. So is Robin a cheap high? Very cheap. Very cheap indeed. So I will not be chewing up any more of those whole gummies unless I have absolutely not a damn thing to do and want to crawl around inside my own mind for a little while. Because, you know, the paranoids, a little dose of the paranoids hit. It was kind of a... It was kind of what, yeah, I think you're right. Stephen New York pointing out, what's that? You got the pain gnome stoned. Yeah. Yeah, they were zapping each other with their little, can't sit for an extended period of time, Steve observed. For outpatient surgery? Pshaw. Yeah. Outpatient surgery. Yeah, me with my new Lee press on vajayjay. Mm-hmm. But I think when I get to bedtime this evening, like a quarter of one of those Delta 9 gummies is going to be just what the doctor ordered, because it's indica. The Delta 9 is, whereas this stuff was, this just seems so obviously sativa. But it was a step forward. I mean, it did help. It's just that it came with some, really silly stonage. Yeah. As in, you know, I'm so wasted. Whack, 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 whack with the tennis shoe in the head. Quoting Rocket Man, Ralph says, so were you high as a kite by then? Yes. Yes, just sort of floating, billowing along on the little breezes with the thinnest of kite string tethering me to the earth. I could have easily, floated away. But this being Titanic Tuesday, I wanted to start with something I didn't get around to mentioning yesterday, and that is the announcement of the retirement and. I mean, this guy is a Titanic intellect. The announcement of the retirement of Devin Nunez. You might recall that he has sued a Twitter account called Devin Nunez's Cow. He's not going to run in the 2022 congressional races. Instead, he's going to take a grift hustling for nitwit Nero and some you know, that media scam that nitwit Nero began. And so since he's quitting, and you know, thanks, Dev. I mean, I guess a lot of people are happy to see him go. Maybe we can get a Democrat in that seat. Wouldn't that be lovely? But he's going to force the people of his district to pay for a special election. Yeah. And once he quits, well, that district has no representation at all. Over on Twitter, there was much fun to be had. Awarded for bravery in the face of hostile internet cows after he sued at Devin Cow. Don't let the barn door hit you in the ass by Devin Nunez. Yeah. ''2021 will be remembered as the year a cow ran Devin Nunez out of politics. And then, well, this guy's right. If Devin Nunez really runs a social network, there will be a small army of people committed to creating accounts pretending to be his cow. I guarantee you that. Goodbye, Devin. How can we miss you if you won't go away? Right? Yeah. In the words of Sam Cedar, Steve points out, Devin is out to pasture. Subject line, Robin goes to Ichiku Park. Sounds like it was all too beautiful last night, Robin. Did you feed the ducks with a bun at Ichiku Park? Oh, God. Thanks, Christopher. I needed that. Yeah, that's... but at least nobody left a cake out in the rain, and I'll never have that recipe again, so we don't have to worry about that part. All right, yeah. So a little bit of January 6th news. Namely that, among other things, the chief of staff, according to a report from CNN, former Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geeks, Chief of Staff Mark Short, is offering his full cooperation, or whatever passes for that if you're a Republican, with the January 6th committee, because Mr. Short would apparently like to continue to have a career. Reporting for CNN, Jamie Gangle said, "We learned the committee subpoenaed Mark Short a few weeks ago, but unlike some other Trump officials, he's not fighting the subpoena. Short's cooperation is a significant development because he's firsthand witness to many critical events. He was with Mike Pence at the Capitol on January 6th. He was also in the Oval Office on January 4th when former President Trump tried to convince Pence not to certify the election results." There's some notion that maybe this will be a dam-breaking event, that once other people have seen him being brave, others will follow behind. But I don't know that I would necessarily buy into that narrative, because look at the brave, bold, never Trump Republicans who voted to impeach Nitwit Nero, at least the second time around, and then turned around and promptly found that no one had their back. There was nobody on their six. And so, yeah, they're falling in droves because the Republican Party is now just a sad little disaffected rump of incredibly violent, incredibly ignorant, incredibly mean, and incredibly paranoid, mostly old white people. Note coming in from from Billable Rick. So, Robin, how are you commemorating the 80th anniversary of the Germans' bombing of Pearl Harbor? At least how that's how the Texas legislature would like to revise history to be taught in their state students. Anyway, December 7, 1941 represents the beginning of the greatest generation's fight against worldwide fascism. Our grandparents were thus the original anti-fascists. Here's to Antifa. Well, your grandparents, my parents, Billable. I was a late-in-life baby. My parents were 38 when I was born. And it's weird for me to realize that I was only, I was born 18 years after the end of the Second World War. So all of that memory was very fresh in my father's mind and in my mother's as well. She told stories about the war on the home front. And he, of course, from time to time would live out his post-traumatic stress disorder recollections of life aboard the carrier. And so, yeah, all kidding about when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor, which I'm sure they will be teaching in Texas and Alabama and Mississippi if they aren't already. All kidding about that aside, spent a good bit of time today thinking about my dad and about that generation and about the fact that, you know, we marched them off to war. And December 7th, 1941, meant that the world had been at war since September 1939, just with us sitting on the sidelines. And the United Kingdom having to stave off the entire might of the Luftwaffe and the German war machine, and frankly had Hitler not gotten all stupid and invaded Russia and opened the Eastern Front, he might have knocked over Great Britain. But he didn't. And so they held out and held on until the war faction of the Japanese imperial government decided they were tired of sitting around. And gosh, there were all those naval vessels just sitting there at Pearl Harbor, and why not bomb the shit out of them? Oddly enough, though, we talk so much about the predilection of people today to buy into various and sundry conspiracies, and to do so ever so easily. Nobody knows exactly how Kennedy came to be murdered. And there are still an abundance of questions around the assassinations, both of Robert Kennedy and of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So by the time we landed a man on the moon, men on the moon, there were people, and it develops later as well, you know, we faked the moon landing, that paranoid conspiracy, or that paranoid fantasy. And we go from there to, oh, I think there was some conspiracy around the explosion of the shuttle Challenger. Turned out it wasn't so much as a conspiracy as it was capitalism. Thanks, Morton Thiokol. And then you get, well, 1995, you get the Murrah Federal Building. Yeah, that wasn't, no. That turned out to be a real conspiracy. Terry Nichols and the little shitbird who actually did it. Timothy McVeigh. Paranoid conspiracies arose around that. And then what at the time seemed the mother of all conspiracies, 9/11. And that let a billion paranoid flowers bloom. And Sandy Hook, yeah. I saw a great meme the other day. It was a message on a T-shirt that said, "Pro-life. To be truly pro-life means that 20 children from Sandy Hook would be entering or graduating from high school this year." Yeah. But in some ways, the beginning of conspiracy theory culture can be found on December the 7th, 1941. Because almost with no lag time, there arose a paranoid conspiracy, and the term that would develop in the 9/11 era was LIHOP. There were two competing conspiracies on 9/11, the MIHOPers and the LIHOPers. The MIHOPers were made it happen on purpose. That's where George W. Bush wears his little black hat and his little black coat with his little black boots and runs around planting bombs inside the World Trade Center. That was the MIHOPers. The LIHOPers were the let it happen on purpose contingent who simply held the belief that they knew it was coming, and they sat back because people like Paul Wolfowitz had said in June 9th of 2001 at a commencement address for the United States Military Academy. He said, "I can't tell you what's coming, but I know it's coming, and all I can tell you is be ready." And that wasn't even 4 months. It wasn't even 4 months later that 9/11 happened. And the LIHOPers think that they had the intel, and they said, "Okay, so I've gone too far into that." With that said, the beginning of it all, in many ways, seems to be Pearl Harbor. Because there were people, political opponents of FDR, who jumped out and said, "Oh, see, FDR let it happen on purpose. LIHOPers. They knew it was coming. There were no warnings. They let all those brave and noble American service personnel go to their deaths in a dastardly sneak attack." Not a word of truth to it. It was all absolute, unmitigated garbage. But it opened a sort of Pandora's bottle. I heard somewhere that the earliest translations are bottle and not box. That's why I say bottle. But it opened up a Pandora's bottle. And I guess we've always leaned toward these kind of fantasies. Do we find it more, emotionally exciting to think there's some sort of vast orchestrated skullduggery at work? Because that Richard Hofstadter in 1964 identified what he called the paranoid strain in American politics, and it had been going on for a while. The paranoia of the 19th and 20th century over Freemasonry is one example. For some reason or another, people want to believe that things can't simply be what they are on their face. So yeah, Bill Ulrich, I did spend some time thinking about December 7th today, the 80th anniversary. I guess, let's see, 41. And my dad would have been 17. So he knew that when he graduated in... he knew that when he graduated in May of 1943, he'd be gone, and it changed his life forever, led to my existence by hook or by crook, led him to want to get out of the mines, something better for himself, eventually led him to want to get the hell out of West Virginia. And he found his way to this state, to Alabama, which he loved. He loved the shoals. But at the same time, he looked at the ways and moors down here and scratched his head. And you know, he moved to a place where he couldn't get a cold beer anytime he wanted to. Instead, had to go on his day off and drive up to Tennessee and buy his beer in bulk and bring it home. My mother would hand ring the entire drive. And then when he got home, he would wait until he got some of it cold and he'd get busy. And about a six pack in, the PTSD would get loose. Now, I'm not talking about he was beating on anybody, but he would rage. And he would talk about what it was like to be on fire control when the ship and the fleet were under attack. And you could see the agony in his eyes, and you could hear it in his voice. And then the next day, he'd be fine. Until, you know, a couple of months later, another trip to the state line. And there was never, ever anyone. And the same applies largely to the entire American fighting force that came home from the Second World War. There was no one for them. If you've ever seen the HBO series, The South Pacific, which centers on the recreations of memoirs of Marines who fought their way across, island hopped across the South Pacific. There was no respite for them either. And so people brought their demons home with them, which seems, in retrospect, kind of callous. Because at the very least, coming out of the First World War, in which our involvement was somewhat minimal, really, when we finally mobilized to get into that when it was 1917, and the war ended on November the 11th, 1918, but still, tens of thousands of American soldiers came back with what was termed then shell shock, named after the lengthy barrages of artillery fire that would drive a person quite insane. By the Second World War, they were calling it combat fatigue. And there was the famous, I don't know if it's apocryphal, I think there's probably an element of truth in it, incident in which General George Patton slapped a soldier for being combat fatigued, for having his mind broken by the horrors of war. He was compelled, apparently, Patton was, to apologize. But it didn't change the fact that when we brought the armed forces home, that there was mostly nothing for them. And it would take a long time before the idea, I don't know exactly when the term post-traumatic stress disorder was coined, but I feel certain that it was in the post, I'm guessing, it was in the post-Vietnam era, because we began to see it manifested in such stark relief in the aftermath of that bloody, misguided misadventure. But I also thought about December 7th, 1941, 80 years ago, in a somewhat different context. And that is this. It was the so-called greatest generation's fight against fascism. And they seemed, in large part, I mean, there are always going to be ne'er-do-wells and malcontents. I think about the profile of Rand Paul's Pappy Ron in, I think, the New York Times. We've talked about this from time to time in the past. In which Ron Paul praises as heroic because he was a free market, because free market libertarian. Ron Paul praised a butcher in his neighborhood in Pittsburgh who would surreptitiously sell meat on the black market at inflated prices because libertarian. And you know, that was meat that was meant to go into the rationing program, meat that was perhaps meant to go to the troops overseas. But being a libertarian, Ron Paul did not give a fuck about that. He just saw a butcher exercising liberty and making and making a fast buck. But I thought about the sacrifices that generation and the generations before them made. The Victory Gardens, the scrap drives, the privations that went with not being able to get a set of tires and having to patch and make the old ones do for a while. Years of Detroit not really building new cars, having turned to the production of tanks and Jeeps and aircraft. And, you know, gasoline rationing, blackout curtains. And the American people largely did all of those things. Perhaps not with a joyful heart, but with an understanding one, realizing that the not just the life of the United States, but that of the entire world depended to one degree or another on very ordinary people under very extraordinary circumstances back home doing their part. And so when Billable Rick wrote in, I said, you know, Billable Rick's grandparents, those were my parents. And my grandparents. But my parents' generation fought the war. And we were talking yesterday about how we measure generations. 80 years seems actually rather a short period of time in which to have lost the ability to collectively sacrifice for the good of the group, of the nation, of the many and not the one. Not to get all Star Trek-y. But in those 80 years, we have. We certainly have. Because it's hard to look at that generation and the privations they faced. Steady stream of death notices coming home. Horror and grief, agony, and on top of it, not being able to get goods and services. And they bore up under it, came out the other end victorious, and then with no help for the soldiers who came home, and sailors and Marines and airmen, Coast Guard, everybody, Nursing Corps, medical staff. With no help, they turned around and built the most prosperous economy the world had ever known. And they took a wartime production economy and managed to continue making it hum with no war. And Korea came along not long after that, and we were scarcely done with Korea before we decided we needed another adventure and found Vietnam. By then, the Cold War was on. But contrast that. And we talked about this early on in the pandemic. Contrast that with now. Contrast that with people who will throw a conniption over being asked to show a vaccine, a proof of vaccination, let alone a rationing card. There continue to be stories on almost a daily basis of the miserable little pathetic excuses for members of the human race. Consider, for example, the case of a young man in, of course, Tenistan, a Karen and her son. Mama's name is apparently Betsy. You'll have your Betsys in the South. Well, Betsy's boy is a fellow by the name of Edward Brennan, and they were in a parking garage, and a young man named Johnny Martinez was checking cars for parking permits, because that's his job, to make sure that people are parked in the parking building legally and paid for it. And it happened on November the 27th. Johnny Martinez works in the parking garage of the River House apartment building. And that's when, according to the Daily Beast article, that is when Edward Brennan, son of Betsy, decided to confront Mr. Martinez for doing his job. Now, just to be, just to give you a little bit of a visual, because the visual will help understand, perhaps help in understanding the nature of the situation. Sonny Boy is wearing a North Face hoodie and sweats and some sort of athletic shoes that he doesn't seem to be able to tie, while Mama is wearing a puffy parka and carrying what appears to be a Louis Vuitton bucket bag. Now, whether it's a real Louis Vuitton or not, I don't know. But she demanded, because, well, she's, you know, she's a white lady in Tennessee, she demanded to see Mr. Martinez's ID. And
you want to know about what I'm doing here?
We just want to know what your job is and why.
None of your business.
All the cops are.
Yeah,
this is not your apartment.
It's not my apartment.
Yes.
Cool. I don't need to tell you anything.
Do you have an ID on you, maybe?
I don't need to tell you what I'm doing, because I'm not interacting with you. Okay. So call whoever you want to call.
It's a secure building.
Huh?
Yeah?
Yeah?
It's a secure building.
It's a secure building. Okay, so how do you think I got in here?
We don't know.
They accost him, demanding to see his ID. And he doesn't take kindly to it, because he's under no obligation to deal with them. And, well, they're being assholes.
Can I follow you in here?
That fucking...
Dude, seriously? No. You're attacking me, seriously?
Get that phone out of your...
No.
Hey.
That's when Edward, son of Betsy, comes up and tries to slap the phone away from Mr. Martinez.
Hey. What the hell's wrong with you, you stupid?
No!
Try something. Try something.
Get the fuck out of my building.
Call the police.
Call the
police. You attacked me. Call the cops.
I didn't attack the police. I didn't attack
you. You didn't attack me? I got it on camera. Call the police right now.
Please.
I'm going to press charges. Go ahead. I'm going to press charges on you. You attacked me.
We asked why you were here.
All right.
I didn't touch you.
Brother, I'm recording the whole thing.
Did
you literally swung at me. Are you crazy?
What are you doing here?
None of your business.
It is our business. We live here.
Then, honey, why don't you know that you've got security on staff that makes sure that people are parking in the parking garage who have a right to park in the parking garage? Parking is at a premium. And this, by the way, is a huge cavernous parking garage. Now, based on what I was saying a minute ago, just take a minute and try to take Betsy here and her young-ish spawn and put them on, say, December the 7th, 1941. Put them into 1942, 1943. You know, they've got to be related to somebody who lived through that era. But there was an abject failure to pass the wisdom and the common decency, such as it was, along. I mean, of course, also during the Second World War and the war at home, it's not like racism disappeared. It didn't. Segregation continued. So all was not, it was not well by any stretch of the imagination. You get the civil rights movement coming out of the end of World War II and the rising prosperity of the newly created post-war economy. Because people wanted to participate and wanted all the same rights that white folks have and the Constitution says that they should have had. And these damn fools went on and on and on, Bitsy and Edward.
So, we live here.
So? And?
Okay, so how did you get in here? We want to know.
Stay away from the dangerous man.
No, we just
call the cops, please. Call the cops. I'm waiting. You know what? Let me get my other phone. I'll call the cops.
Okay,
perfect.
I'll call the cops, and I'm going to press charges for you attacking me.
No.
I didn't touch you.
We asked you.
You attack me, it's over. Call the cops.
911.
Call the cops. 911.
We're calling.
Call
the
cops.
We asked you what you were doing
here. Metro PD, call the cops, and they're going to come here, and then they're going to arrest you. Call the cops.
They're not going to arrest him.
Watch. Watch. You're going to be surprised how fast they're going to arrest him for attacking you. Watch.
I didn't touch you.
Watch.
Okay, we're at 4 Academy.
Watch.
Young Edward is smirking, by the way.
We're in the parking deck, and there's some gentleman down here. We asked him what he was doing down here, and he said it's none of our business.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of gotten nasty towards us.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of are trying to figure out why this person's in the parking deck. And he will not tell us why he's here. He says it's none of our business.
He's not showing any ID.
He's not, will not show us his ID.
Call
it's
the police.
A secure building.
We are.
Call the police.
I'm not security, no.
Oh, I'm not security, no. No, I'm just a Karen. I'm Bitsy. And my overgrown toddler of a son is standing next here, next to me here saying, nobody touched you, and he just slapped the shit out of the guy who says, call the cops. Yeah, am I security? No, I'm not security. He won't show us his ID. We're white people. He has to show us his ID because we're white. But you have to respect the certainty that Mr. Martinez shows. No, really, call them. Call them. I want them to come here. You're going to be surprised how quickly you're going to be arrested.
I live in this building and this person's walking around down here and we're
tell him the person's black. Tell him he's a black, it's a black man walking.
I don't care what color.
Tell him it's a black man walking. Tell him that.
We're Academy Police.
Tell him that.
Yeah.
Call the police. Where the robbery happened.
Please send the police because they attacked me. Send the police.
We did not attack you.
They attacked me. Please send the police to where they're located right now.
I'm gonna call the security officer for the building.
Send the police.
River House building.
Can you come in with me, please?
Yeah.
Stay away from that crazy man.
Yeah, yeah. Good luck with that. Call the police.
He keeps him on camera the entire time.
My name is Betsy Brennan. This gentleman's now telling me I'm calling the police because he's what?
Pretty sure that's the reason why you even came up to me. Well, let's go. Let's go. We're going to sort this out. Don't worry. Call the police. No, no, no. You're involved in a crime. Stay down here. Stay down here. Stay down here. I'm going to get my phone and I'm going to call the police back. You crazy or something, man? Seriously? Seriously?
Look in the fucking rear.
Seriously? Gonna be attacking me. You crazy? Hold on. I'm right here. I'm not going nowhere. I'm not going nowhere. Stay right here.
No, I'm not staying right here.
Send the police. Send the police. We need the police assistance, please. Racist people. Racist people.
A med hat?
Yeah, send the police. Send the police.
Zip up sweatshirt, great. Wet sneakers. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, now you're leaving. Okay.
Yes, it's unsafe.
Yeah, it's unsafe. Yeah, no worry. I'm going to have you arrested, buddy. I'm going to have you arrested. Good luck, what?
Motherfucker.
What'd you call me?
Stop. I called you a motherfucker.
A mother what?
Trucker.
Why? Because you attacked me and it didn't go the way you planned it, huh?
Hey, you're
cuckoo. Yeah, I'm cuckoo. You come up to somebody you don't know and you start interrogating them. Who's crazy?
Sir, I
who's
asked
crazy
you
about
what
that?
You were doing in
that's none of your business. I'm doing my job. I don't got to tell you nothing. What
yes,
are you doing with you?
So how did you get into this security?
None of your business.
You do need to tell
none
me.
Of your business.
You need
nothing, I don't need to tell you nothing.
Though.
I don't need to tell you nothing. Call
you
the police and wait here for the police. Wait for the police. Wait for the police. Your son attacked me. Wait for the police. Crazy, yo. Like, these people crazy. First, I seen them following me around. I'm over here trying to, you know, figure out what, you know, doing my audits to do. They're following me around. And I'm like, all right, you know what? Whatever. I was going to head off to one of the other spots that I usually go audit to do the booty. And then I'm walking, and then the lady comes asks me, how, you know, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Now, and see, this is the other side of the story, if there is actually an other side. What Mr. Martinez does is he checks cars for parking permits in a building, and if they don't have the appropriate permit, he works for a company that does this for oodles and oodles of properties in the Nash Vegas area, and if somebody's parked there illegally, he boots the car. People who live in major urban centers and, you know, less than, know what a pain in the ass being booted is. But generally speaking, you don't get booted if you're not parked illegally. So apparently the cops don't necessarily show up lickety split and Johnny on the spot. But 5 days ago, they did file an arrest warrant against Edward, son of Bitsy, for taking a swing at Mr. Martinez. And, well, it remains to be seen what would come of it. And the guy was just in the middle of doing a job that the capitalist miracle says somebody has to do. You know, the guy walks around a parking garage with a headlamp on and knee pads, has a lanyard around his neck. So he doesn't just look like some rando trying to boost an automobile. And when the Daily Beast interviewed him, he said, "I felt like crap. I thought I was going to have a typical Karen moment." Well, you did have a typical Karen moment. And so it remains to be seen, and I'm sure there will probably not be much in the way of follow-up on what happens to young Edward, son of Bitsy. I guess his testosterone just got the better of him. I don't know. Well, no, it wasn't his testosterone. It was his racism. You hope that they'll take it seriously, because, well, it was in fact a violent crime, because the guy hit him, slapped at him, because he was being videoed being Edward, son of Bitsy. Yeah. Steve says, "I would like to award Mr. Martinez a big stinking cowbell. He made old Bitsy, that's Bitsy, not Betsy, Bitsy, B-I-T-S-Y, and her demon spawn look like the cock knockers they are." Maybe they're nice people most of the time. Nah. Nah. Or then again, so, I mean, really? The guy's got knee pads, he's got a headlamp, He's got a lanyard. And he's checking cars for parts. And they want to, what are you doing here? And, you know, I imagine that if they, because he deals with the public from time to time, Mr. Martinez does. Has to. He's in a public space, a parking garage. And people worry about their automobiles. And I imagine that this is not the first time someone's approached him and said, hey, what are you doing? And if they're not assholes about it, he'll say, well, you know, I work for the company and we check parking to make sure only people who are allowed to park here park. Oh, okay, well, thanks. But these people couldn't do that. Anybody want to place any bets on how Bitsy votes? Anybody want to place any bets on if Edward votes? He's clearly old enough to vote. Yeah, I'm guessing if you followed him home, you'd probably find some MAGA hats or, you know, Trump, fuck your feelings t-shirts in the closet there. Because these are the people that Nitwit Nero empowered. And these are the people who are itching for him to return. Reinforce the nastiness that is their world. Oh, and speaking of nasty, little update on the guy who looks like hot dog smell, Steve Bannon. He was in court, having been indicted on contempt of Congress for his refusal to answer the subpoena that the January 6th Commission served him with. This past Monday, the prosecutors said that in a court filing, the case is very straightforward and is going to take exactly one day to try. Defense counsel, on the other hand, because defense counsel, and because pettifogging, said, oh, no, Your Honor, we're going to need every bit of 10 days to try this case. And they asked for the case to be tried next October. The pettifoggers, writing on behalf of Steve Bannon, said, in our view, this is not the average criminal case on the docket, because it will take more time to obtain discovery and more time to fully brief the issues. That there is pettifogging. What kind of discovery do you want? Here's the subpoena. Here's your client on air saying he won't answer the subpoena. Here's the empty chair that was waiting for him that he never filled because he defied the subpoena. There's your discovery. The prosecutors said they wanted to try the case in April. And the judge did some baby splitting because judges just love to do that Solomonic baby splitting. And the judge said, no, April's too soon. And, to the pettifoggers, he said, no, October is too late. And so sometime in the, July the 18th, the man who looks like hot dog smell will be going to court on his charge of contempt of Congress. And the court was probably not just being engaging in baby splitting for the sake of baby splitting. Because the court is backlogged with January 6th insurrection cases, which, of course, was the whole reason Bannon did not wish to testify. He didn't want to testify because he was right at the beating heart of the of the planning of the insurrection, allegedly, and was really hoping to stretch this out, because if the trial takes a day or 10, what seems to be an open and shut case for conviction, well, then he'll stay out of jail while he appeals to the D.C. Circuit. And if the D.C. Circuit says, nope, you're guilty of sin, go to jail, do not pass go, he will still stay out of jail while he appeals to the Supreme Court of the United States, where he hopes that a guy who once wrote that it was okay for cops to shoot an unarmed black man in the back of the head while the guy was fleeing and trying to get away from them and not posing any threat to them, him and a guy who said that a black man should have frozen to death in a truck instead of going for help, and those two alongside a guy who sexually harassed and sexually abused a woman and talked about pubes on Coke cans and long dong silver, those three, and a guy who was so wasted through his prep school and college years that he can't remember how many women he raped, alongside a woman who has to get her husband's permission to do anything because she's a fucking handmaid, may very well say, you know, especially with regard to those last three, we owe Donald Trump our fucking cushy job lives. Mr. Bannon, go and sin no more. As to Steve Bannon, Steve says, as a lover of good hot dogs, especially the ones I used to get at Riverfront Stadium, I take issue with your slanderous comments regarding the smell of hot dogs. I'm going to solemnly ask that you refer to him as a person who smells like the water that is left over after one boils hot dogs. Petty foggers. See, that's what they do. Yeah. And as far as the guy working for the booting company, let's check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Robin, you have triggered me. Now, who the hell, why the hell did you do that shit?
I done did it again, huh?
I mean, this is, I don't know, it's echoing or something. You hear me okay?
It'll settle. If you've got the speakers on somewhere, turn them down.
Yeah, I got to go in there and on. I'm going to put you on mute when I get close for a second. All right, here we go. I'm putting you on mute for like 5, 10 seconds.
Yeah, just tell her. Just, we're good. You there, Todd?
Okay. Yeah, I should. I didn't know. I'm doing a bunch of things, cooking, you know. Look, you are. Oh God, this noise. Look, at what point? See, you triggered me because that shit happened to me shortly after I moved down here. I had never experienced that shit in my life. It's not about me, but it is about me. I want to know how many of the black people who listen to this program have experienced this fucking bullshit, because it's happening in California. What the fuck is wrong with these people?
Well, dissect the this bullshit part. I suspect I know what you mean, but we work best when we work with specificity, Todd. Which part of the bullshit?
Okay, I know.
Because there's a bunch of bullshit here.
Right. And I'm clean cut and articulate enough to enunciate what I mean. Okay.
Articulate, so. Really? You went there? Articulate. He's a very articulate black man.
And I have a tan suit. No, man, but this is ridiculous. Man, this is the thing. Where is name A, roughly? We're supposed to be so past this at this point. That's the first thing. We should be so past this. How do white people, and I'm saying it, it's white people, And it's Hispanic people too who you know, lean Castilian, you know, Spanish ancestry. Them too. That they feel that it's okay to ask people for their paper. Because that's in essence what this shit is about.
You're absolutely right. Because if they were so absolutely concerned that there was skullduggery going on, why not get the drop on him and just go back up into the stairwell and dial 911? You know, there's a suspicious black man down here looking at cars. Can you send a roller? Oh, yes, ma'am. We'll be right there.
That's what they do in the Northeast. Exactly. You see someone suspicious, you say, okay, you clock it.
And when you see that you're not in the area, it's not even about ethnicity. It's like, hey, they look suspicious. There's somebody looking in cars in my neighborhood. You know, you might want to roll through. But that's not what we're talking about. See, I'm going to have to cut this other radio off because it's damn religious shit as well. This stuff is ridiculous, man.
Standing
we
by.
Can't even get no real... Jesus Christ. That's funny, isn't it? Yeah, so, you know, there's so much to this. There's so many layers.
Peel them.
And before I forget, pardon me?
Peel them.
All right, so let's look at real time here, or current time. And I don't know if I mentioned this before, but it's been burning me up. You look at that case in Georgia with the father and the son and the little dumb jackass taking pictures. Who got them all in trouble? In Brunswick, which is a nuclear base there, right in Georgia. You see, the father is former law enforcement.
Right.
How many lives has he ruined where he felt it was like what he was doing was righteous?
Oh yeah.
I'm not hearing anybody in the mainstream press ask that question. This is the fuck. That's why we have Black Lives Matter. How many lives is that motherfucker ruined? This wasn't the first time he did that shit. He was way too fucking comfortable.
Yeah, let's roll, son.
See? Am I off here?
No, you're not. And there's a dynamic I wasn't even thinking about. You know, because Mama Bitsy was there, son Edward felt the need to be all macho.
Protect a white woman.
Yeah, because, you know, he got his North Face hoodie, right?
You know, this shit has got to stop. Now, and I'm going to tell you, the worker, the man earning his living, the worker.
And probably not much of one into the bargain. I'm not being a bitch. I mean, it's Tenistan. They're not, he ain't making anything resembling probably a union wage or anything like that.
You can hear it in his voice. Like, look, motherfucker, you would be crying about me if I wasn't working. Now here I'm working, talking shit. I can hear it in his voice. I know what that's like. Okay. So if anyone is curious, as a matter of fact, friends, relatives, neighbors who we don't agree with, this is another salient way to explain what white privilege is.
Yeah, just roll up on somebody and say, I want to see your ID. Dude has a lanyard hanging off of his neck.
Man.
I mean, really? Are you gonna go and hotwire a car with your work lanyard on?
I know, a light on your fucking head and knee pads is like, catch me, I'm a criminal. You know, yeah, I'm looking to steal your catalytic converter, steal your car, everything else. That's right. And see, I'm going to tell you, he did exactly what I did. And this is what we need to start doing. We need to ask these motherfuckers for their ID. Just like these motherfuckers who tried to take over the government. If they don't like it here, they need to go back to fucking Africa where they fucking came from. Let that sink in.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought that was funny.
It was funny. I mean, we all come from Africa. All of us.
No, but I mean, this is the kind of shit that we get. What the fuck? Like, I put up with this shit all the time at work. Oh, are you cleaning? I'm like, no.
No, really.
You
please,
look angry.
Please tell me no. Please tell me no. You're a fucking archivist.
I'm telling you my daily life. Look, it's a fucked up. Motherfuckers come in there and look at me like I'm a zoom. Some people.
Do they speak to you loudly and slowly, Todd? Are you the janitor?
Who is in charge? Oh, God. Don't look. But you know what, though? I apologize
for that. You led me into that, and it's entirely your fault.
You know, I need to laugh. That's funny shit. But this, what is this shit, man? How did we get this far off base here, collectively? Because we all know we are. I'm not talking about, but we are friends and neighbors. Like, look, man, this is what I'm saying. These type of white people need to fucking realize the world ain't that white anymore. People have friends, family, neighbors.
Hold on a second. You might have just kind of squeaked the door open there. I mentioned the paranoid fantasies around 9/11, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember a phrase that kind of became more present in our national dialogue in the weeks and months and years following 9/11? If you see something, say something.
Absolutely. It was creepy, yes. Mm-hmm.
Which was kind of like an invitation for people to inform on other people.
It had a kind of East German flair to it, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It smacked. Genau. But could that be part of it? But then again, if you see something, say something. Well, again, call 911, go up the stairwell, and but I'm glad they didn't, because the Metro PD may have rolled up on dude and blown him away before they got to his lanyard. I mean, what's the national number? A person of color is 3 times more likely to be killed by the police than a white person?
Mm.
Something like that?
Well, I don't know what the data is on that.
But then again, he seemed pretty comfortable. He's like, yeah, call him. Because he probably interacts with the police. He might not. He might even know who's working day shift.
That's a good point. Because that is right. They probably patrol. You know, that's a crime spot. Certain. You know, that's how they do things. Law enforcement. I mean, if you're smart, if you have person actions and stuff, you know, the cruiser rolls through once in a while. They know, like, because I'm friendly with the. You know, I have to be with the police here. I know. You know, when they're who's around, what working shift and all that kind of stuff. That's what they do. And it's a good thing. That's what they do. We, you know, that's what we need. We need patrols. But we don't need this is an opening into the part of our country, a part of the general white psyche.
I have to share something with you. I just got a note from Arnold in PA. Todd is whiter than I am.
I had no response to that.
Yeah, I understand, but Arnold meant that in Arnold meant well by that.
It, you know, see, it's all complicated. See, that goes back to slavery. You know, if you try to read, if you speak well, oh, you're trying to be white. Do you know, kids still say that in school.
Yeah. Sounding white.
What is like, okay, explain what that means. And then when you break it down, when you make people answer that question, man, that's when you flesh your shit out. See, this is what you have to ask these motherfuckers. Like, why do you feel okay? Why do you think it's okay to ask this individual? Or question him. What gives you the right? Because remember, that used to be the fucking law.
Yeah.
That used, you know. Nigga, man, don't get me started. Because my book is coming out at some point about Reconstruction. Because it was just, think about that shit. This all goes back to Reconstruction and white people just being like, damn, what in the fuck happened? We've lost control. Because remember, imagine if you were in 1870, let's say 76, let's say you're like mid-20s, okay? So that means when you were a young person, in your formative years, you know, you were used to seeing slaves. And by 1876, you were watching black people craft legislation. So in that short span of time, 10 years, it's like, how'd you go from these, you know, these are subhuman people, you know, they're people, but they're subhuman. They're not that smart and they can't read and write. And all of a sudden, your whole fucking value system is all fucked up. See, that's what we're dealing with. People's value systems are just, you know, they're being assaulted. And I'm not trying to rant. I'm just trying to explain, I think, in my, you know, that this is the way I see it. How the, where the fuck do these motherfuckers get off? Oh, let me see your papers, bitch. Are you a fucking fugitive? You look like a criminal to me. You got that, yeah, you from, oh, Tennessee, let me see. You got the moonshine on you? You know, how do you want to go approach this shit? That's how, I'm telling you, man, when I had that shit happen to me, that's exactly what I did, exactly what that worker did. I said, oh, no. I'm staying right here. I demand that you call the motherfucking police right now. That's exactly what the fuck happened, right up there on the polo field, right up the street from my house. I said, oh, no, you will call. You scared? All right, motherfucker, right, call the police right now. I demand. And when the police came, they were like, well, no, you can do whatever you want to. It's public property. And they just looked stupid. They were dumbfounded. I was like, yeah, see, dumbass motherfucker, the fuck out of here.
Yeah. And by the way, Steve in New York wants to join our conversation. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Robin. Hey, Todd. What's the word, Bird?
How you doing, Bird?
I just kept thinking. I still want to, where I live. I live in Queens, and there's a lot of West Indian, a lot of Hispanic folk. I still want to call the cops and say, "There's some fucking white dude here in my building. I don't know who the hell he is." I mean, I just
creeping around, right?
Yeah, this white dude's creeping around. I mean, he just came in. I asked him for. Can I just tell you something?
What?
Sometimes shit just, it doesn't compute. Who the fuck walks up to some stranger and says, "Hi, show me your ID." Exactly. You're laughing too. It's like, what makes, why would, I don't get it. I mean, I've seen people.
Because you're reasonable. You're reasonable. Like, deep down, you're reasonable. Because think how many people we're around that speak Spanish all the time. And, like, some people think, oh, God, are they illegals? And other people think, okay, they're speaking Spanish. You know, maybe, you know, whatever. That, you know what? It doesn't bother me.
Hey, how about the people who don't think anything at all? How about the people who are...
That's me!
How about the people who are schooled in, I will mind my own business?
Mind my own fucking business. Okay. Listen, I want both of you guys to echo your mom.
Both of you what?
How many times did both... say it again?
Guys and one woman. It's a two-on-one.
This is one of those moments when you can you people us.
Okay.
You people.
Okay. Listen, we got a black man, we got a trans woman, and we got a gay man. So we're all you people and each other.
Right. Yes.
But think about this. You know what, Todd? Let me tell you something. Y'all just went there. How many times did you hear your mother say this to you? Listen, mind your own business.
And keep your hands to yourself.
Mind your own business. Yeah.
And see, in this case, we have a perfect example of the failure of both of those essential tenets of basic human decency. Mind your own business, right? And then young Edward, son of Bitsy, could not keep his hands from him to himself and slapped Mr. Martinez and therefore got an arrest warrant.
Right. Well, we didn't get
an arrest warrant? Was there an arrest warrant?
Yeah, it took them a while. It happened on like November 27th, and they issued an arrest warrant on December the 2nd for Edward, son of Bitsy.
Oh, that's beautiful. Because, you know, they showed up at his door, and they went, remember how you assaulted this guy? I didn't do none of that. Trump's going to give me a pardon. I just don't get it. I'm sorry. Look, I'm almost as white as Robin. I mean, I don't get sunburned when I open the fridge, but pretty damn close.
Alabaster.
I don't get it.
Alabaster.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Alabaster.
I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, I don't. Listen, I got shit to do. I got a law practice. I got a cat to take care of who's diabetic. I got shit to do. I don't care if some dude or woman or whoever is in my building doing whatever he or she needs to do. I don't care. I got shit to do.
You think maybe Bitsy and Edward, son of Bitsy, might have seen Mr. Martinez looking at their busted down hoopty?
They probably had an El Camino, Robin.
Hey.
With AstroTurf in the back.
Now, come on now.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm all excited. It's never going to happen, but the fine folks at Hyundai have introduced an automobile I really want. They call it the Santa Cruz. No. They call it the Santa Cruz. It's four doors, and it's got a truck bed. It is the reincarnation of the Chevy El Camino, and I want one. And it's all-wheel drive.
And is one of the options? But Todd, I'll guarantee you one of the options is getting AstroTurf.
No, you have to add the AstroTurf. You have to put the AstroTurf in the bed as an aftermarket addition.
Yeah. I fucking hate these people.
And
I'm sorry.
And I'm by God going to get pink AstroTurf.
Oh, you're such a girly girl.
Yeah, you are such a girly girl. You know that you're such a girly girl. Hey, Robin, let me ask you something. What if I were to somehow get tickets to the national championship game where Alabama plays them? Would you go with me?
Yeah, in a heartbeat. I don't know. No, not in the COVID crock pot. Sadly, no. Because the first one is I'd go with it. Yeah. No, especially because it's going to be a bunch of I'm an Alabama fan too, but I'm going to be an Alabama fan in front of a TV set, not breathing other Alabama fans' little viral particles.
Well, you know that up in Ann Arbor, that Michigan is like, and I'm saying Michigan referring to the state, not to those sacks of shit over there in Ann Arbor at that school. I'm sorry.
You're not going to get your good sportsman trophy at the end of the season, Steve.
No, I don't want it. I don't want it. I've realized something. I really do hate them.
Now, okay, it's a fine Big Ten institution, just like TTDS is, just like Iowa and Minnesota and Wisconsin and Northwestern. They're good. And Illinois. They're good Big Ten, and the Big Ten is respected for the quality of their academics. I mean, there's probably nobody on the Michigan squad majoring in entrepreneurship. But
Robin, and
by the way, I have to tell you, I saw someone making fun of the fact that the player with the highest grade point average on the Crimson Tide team is a senior who is majoring in entrepreneurship. And I didn't respond, but I immediately recognized what that was. That's the car dealer major. That's when you know you're probably not going to go to the NFL, but you've made a little name for yourself here. And so as soon as you're out, you're going to open a car dealership. And so
personal injury practice.
No, car dealership. It's not law. It's entrepreneurship. It's an undergraduate degree. And so a couple of days ago, when I was out in the car, I had the SEC championship on, and I heard an ad for Julio Jones Toyota, I think it was.
Wait, Julio Jones?
Mm-hmm. And he
That's
was
like Carlos O'Kelly.
No, Julio. No, quit that.
Suspect. Julio Jones.
Velvet Jones's brother?
Julio quit it because there's a backstory here and you're going to miss it. Okay. Julio Jones was a world-class wide receiver for the Alabama Crimson Tide. And is remembered as such. But I heard that Julio Jones Toyota, and I said, that dude majored in entrepreneurship, because it's also known as the car dealer major. It's the major where you learn how to run car dealerships. Just saying.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. No, you're
but
right.
You know what? Look,
you're right.
Let me just say this real quick, and we won't talk college football here on out. When we lost, I suddenly realized that all of my rhetoric to my brain and my conscience about it just being a game was bullshit. I realized that. And I look at it more about the pride of my state, which is a very godly and holy place.
Okay.
Taking on the satanic antichrist.
You know, people are beginning to look forward to your rantings and ravings. You just got an imaginary cowbell from Jeremy in Vermont, an imaginary cowbell for Steve embracing his inner hate.
Mm-hmm. But I don't hate much. But the things I hate, I really hate. And I want to see death and destruction come upon them.
This is Michigan. They had a school shooting. And they can't hardly open a school without some little asshole calling in a gun threat now. So let's tread lightly on that.
Okay. In deference to you, as my trans...
And in deference to the members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who are there,
okay.
And yes, we are one big,
okay,
happy family. And, you know, the beatings will continue until morale improves.
Exactly. I'm not going to say we're one big, happy family. I still consider the people in that state to be my step family, but, okay, they're not, you know, okay. Anyway.
Oh, my God. What makes you think of a hillbilly that was born in Alabama?
Are you kidding me? You're a hillbilly born in Alabama who lives in the state next to where I was born. You're a cousin at worst.
Yeah, by God, it's our... It may be named after your state, but it's our damn river.
Absolutely. I get it. Listen, you and I, we are soul brother sisters.
I don't want to catch you musky fishing in my river.
Okay.
Want to be clear about it.
Okay.
Are you people still start fighting over stills and shit?
Fuck yes.
You people. Okay, I get it. You people. Okay. Okay, Mr. Perot. I get it. You people.
By the way, Todd, Brother Deacon Asa said, come on now, Todd, don't be bleaching out on us.
Oh, man.
Can I raise this issue? This is Robin Kincaid clueless white girl moment. So I was waiting to pick up a to-go order. And, you know, fully masked, sitting at the bar. And I hear dude around, and I'm not listening in. I mean, you know how people are on cell phones. He's not on speaker or anything, but he's talking into his cell phone like he's talking to the whole restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And he's apparently talking, Todd, to a buddy of his. And we've touched on this before, but I just can't get past it. Dude is talking to one of his best pals, apparently. Or maybe a business associate. I don't know. And every other word is that word. He's addressing his friend.
Say what?
Todd, help me.
Damn, that's some strange shit.
Well, I mean, it's a thing.
You know what, though? Let me ask both of you.
I mean, hold on, Steve. I want.
I need
Todd for this one because.
Well, you need him to speak for all. African American people in the world.
This is just a matter of trying to clear up perhaps some cluelessness on my part. I mean, I understand there's a big difference between who can and who cannot, but would we not all be mm-hmm. better off if the word was just not in the vocabulary? And this is so white of me to say that, but just a little help.
Okay, let me say this. As Condoleezza Rice used to say, the plantation system, slavery has made life complicated in America. And for people to think that it's just gone and that's it, that's exactly why we have, one of the reasons why we have all the problems we have. Because honestly, if you dig down deep enough, we're still in a plantation system. The South never did lose. We acquiesced everything to them to keep the country together. Then by that, they felt like they were in charge and still in charge. So that being said, you know, you're talking about white boys like who immerse themselves in a certain culture and they either come here, do rags and listen to a certain type of music. And
no, this was not a white boy.
Okay. Well, this is what I'm saying. See, there are different
and this
ways.
This was not that different spelling that ends in A. This was the whole word, like 15 times.
I'm glad that he gave the qualification that he did. Because I've gone off from people like, I am not speaking for every black person because my experience is quite different than most black folks in this country. It's not that I don't understand being underclass or whatever, because I've been poor. I've been on my own since I was 15, really. And so I understand what it's like to struggle with this and that and the other. But you see, it's just a word. Like, but see, I'm different. People can call me that word, I don't find it offensive, frankly. It's just a word. I'm like, that just tells me about who you are. Like,
so am I just, am I just over-conditioned?
Maybe, but see, it's all about the context. It's all about the context. Now, if you call me a nigger and you've got the Confederate flag and an axe in your hand and a torch.
I was trying to avoid the word itself, but never mind.
Well, look, man, that's what I'm saying. We have to be upfront and frank to confront. To cure a disease, you have to identify the disease and call it what it is. And that's just what we have to do. Hey, now, names don't mean shit. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
No, go ahead.
Well, okay, so he's on the phone. He's loud. Like, I think that's a little bit ghetto, frankly. I do. I mean, I'm not that I use the term a lot, frankly. I do. And, but it's a pick and choose type of thing. You know, you have to know the content. You know, you just not. If somebody, somebody doesn't maybe have to share my ethnicities around me, and they start saying I'm gonna look at them a little funny. And I'm sorry, it's not fair, but that's the way it is. We haven't arrived to that point yet. Where I'm sorry.
Well, I certainly wasn't stupid enough to say anything, and it was not my place to say anything. But I don't think I'm ever gonna be. In a place where I'm going to hear it and it's not going to be ugly.
Yeah. Robin, listen, you and I, we're on the same page. I hear kids saying that and I hear in my part of the country, and Todd probably would testify to this. I'm sorry. I hear a lot of kids, particularly Hispanic kids, using the term, and I won't kid you, Robin, I have the exact same reaction. I actually find my neck, my back, and my shoulders tensing up.
Well, and in fact, I just got a note from our pal O-Pipe Down over on Twitter. And she said, may I put in my 2 cents? Put in the whole nickel. I mean, no, I'm game for this conversation. she said, I use the so-called C word, and I'm not offended by it in the least. If I have one, I can use the word. That's my position. But if a dude calls me that, he's deaf a creep. And it's kind of the same way with hillbilly, you know. There's no comparison. Let me see here. Ron in Raleigh says, how old was this man? I would say early to mid 30s tops. And, you know, it was just, and the fact that I should probably shut up before I get myself in deep shit.
No, Robin, who was the person who just wrote it on Twitter?
Oh, that was O-Pipe Down. She's awesome.
Oh my God.
I can agree with what she's saying, but let me say this real quick, Todd.
Go ahead, please.
Taking me a second. Robin and I are in the same boat. Other people who ever use that term, they may have taken ownership of it, as a lot of gay folk took ownership of the F word. I don't use it, but the N word, I will never be in a position to not cringe when I hear it. And no matter who says it, and whoever says it between and among themselves is one thing. But I won't kid you. When I hear that word, the image, and this is no exaggeration, the image that immediately comes to my mind, white, horseback.
Well, you know, it's interesting because this sort of opens a door on a lot of different areas where assumptions made wind up creating problems. I just had a note from Arnold in PA said, before I shaved my head, people always thought I was Middle Eastern. Literally been called one of them. And then forget it with my vision. I had a nurse triage me and thought I was on drugs because of the way my eyes look. It says something that we cannot, I don't know why people can't wait until the facts are in. It's like something that happened to, me, I mentioned before, I had been in my hospital room on Tuesday, the 9th of November, for maybe 15 minutes. And I was I was hurting like hell, but I was enough to myself to know and to sort of count the 8 times that I was misgendered in those 15 minutes.
That hurt.
He, him, his. Check his IV.
Listen to me. That hurt. I don't know what you felt. You hear me? See, I'm judgmental. I'm sorry. Did it hurt? That's the question. So did it hurt? It made you feel some kind of way. You were talking about it.
And, yeah. And that may be the minor miracle of the day in all of that audio that I played of Bitsy and son of Bitsy going after the guy looking after parking permits. I guess it's a miracle that word somehow didn't sneak into the didn't just erupt into the conversation. As in,
they all but said it, didn't they?
No. No, no. I mean, maybe they got close, but they didn't say it.
Well, but that, I mean, okay.
But Mr. Martinez clearly understood that that was the impetus behind what they were doing.
And let me tell you, Mr. Martinez had a very distinct New York City area accent.
For Nashville,
I thought the same thing. I thought the same thing. Yeah. I was like, that guy sounds like he's from the Bronx.
Look, man, you got a lot of Dominicans, Jamaica. Queens is like a melting. Queens is what New York used to be. It's the melting pot, man. Everybody's in Queens.
But I also live in the Bronx. That sounded very Bronx. That sounded very Grand Concourse to me.
Mm.
Don't ask.
Mm-hmm.
It just did. I mean, I've lived in every borough except the borough that shouldn't be part of New York City.
Staten Island.
And that borough is. Staten Island, excellent. Oh, give you, I award both of you a cow. Actually, no, I award both of you a gay gong.
It's a gong sound with a lisp.
It's a gong sound with a lisp. I don't know.
That's funny.
You know, you people get on this air and you just try to, you conspire to figure out ways to get me hate mail.
Well, you know, Steve, oh God, look, man, don't even get me started. But wait, let me go back to the, I hate saying the N-word. I feel like this is sellout. This is cop-out. But I'll do it for you know, for people's you know, for their conscience or whatever.
Ginger.
See, this is right. This is a big, not secret, I guess, if you have black friends. But you know, it's a term of endearment in between black males. You know, nigga, please. You know, it's a term of endearment. In that context.
That's why I asked the question I asked, because if that's what it is, that's what it is.
But it doesn't work the other way.
But a chain is only as strong as its weakest link, and I don't care how much endearment went with it. Somewhere along the way, some Edward son of Bitsy is going to hear that and go, "Oh, I got to tell you, was it true?" Okay, and it's bad enough that in the South is already full of people who feel like. Well, they've been taught since they learned to talk to use that word, and I mean white people. And it's counterproductive.
People have been, ever since I was a teenager, white folks have been saying, "Well, if you say it, why can I say it? That's racist. If you say it, I can say it." And you know, then you had to explain why you know probably it's not appropriate for you to use that word.
We've got some wisdom coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Let me posit something. I'm an old guy, Ron says. So when I was young, when that word was spoken, it meant something. A young man in his 30s doesn't attach nearly any of the hatred that used to be implicit in that word. It still shouldn't be used willy-nilly, but it's become fashionable in certain groups. Fashionable.
That is exactly right.
Wait.
Bring up Tom McWhorter.
Go, Todd.
In other words, the more we use the word, you see, it takes the power away. That's the power away from it.
That's the Lenny Bruce theory. Lenny Bruce said, the more you use dirty words, the less power the dirty words have. And to a certain extent, I guess, you know, we're testing his hypothesis because, words used by common people, by ordinary Americans in the ordinary course of life, include things that, people of a certain age were taught never to utter, but of course uttered them just the same.
Now I'm going to tell you a little secret. It's three of us talking. You know, I've heard my childhood friend.
Nobody else is going to know, right?
Yeah.
But
John McWhorter, the linguist, he's my childhood friend, right? We've been friends forever. And this is, he's a linguist, historian, linguist, blah, blah, blah. Now he has a different take. He's always been conservative. He was always exactly like he is now. He hasn't changed. He has not changed. He's kind of been like that his whole life. I'm not going to get too personal, but but he's pretty much been like that now. And he's been at Stanford and Columbia. And I don't know if he's at NYU now or Stanford, I forget. Cause I did talk with him the other day cause he's been on NPR lately, but he's a childhood friend of mine. He's a linguist now, and he has a different take on this. So you see, once again, I don't know how many times we're going to say this. The black community in America is not monolithic by any stretch. You see, that's the point of that. And Steve, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I thought that was important. You know, this is the beauty of America, though. You see, we're a quilt. I'm sorry, Steve. Please go ahead. I know you have something to offer.
No, what I was going to say is this is the very first person I ever dated seriously was black. And he used to say to me, Steve, you my N-word. But let me tell you something. I would never, ever say that to him. Ever. Now, perhaps if both of us were 20 years younger, we might say it to each other. But Robin can understand this. My brain is so wired to despise that term.
Yeah, and let's be clear here. What you're saying, Stephen, what I'm saying is not in no wise should be understood as virtue signaling. It's just how it is. But I have a better understanding now, Todd, and I appreciate that. Because it was just weird. The way I experienced it that evening.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Maybe if the place had been a little bit busier, it wouldn't have been that way, but it wasn't. And I mean, oh well.
And you heard it over the din of everything. That just makes it that much worse.
Yeah. What, Todd?
It really is starting to think. You talk about the hospital experience, right?
I'm talking about what I heard when I went to pick up my to-go order, and I was standing there in the restaurant.
Okay, because I was thinking about more when you mentioned how people were misusing your
misgendering, yeah,
your pronoun, right? And Emma, here you go through all this trouble, and people had the decency to say, that's kind of fucked up.
Let me ask a question.
Am I missing something, or is that fucked up?
It is fucked up. I agree. But let me pose this question. Fuck, I hate nuance. I just wish everything were black and white, because it's much easier to love and hate rather than to see nuance. I hate having a conscience and being as intelligent as I am. In addition to my extreme humility, I really
can't
stand
it. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be
humble
when you're perfect in every way. I was about to start singing.
Oh, it is. It is. And I one of these days, I'll send you my 10-volume encyclopedia of humility that I wrote. Let me ask you this, Robin. There's always an intent behind it. Did the people say it out of ignorance? Did they say it out of spite?
No, they just didn't care. In the case of the misgendering, they just didn't care enough to get it right. But I mentioned all of this, and it took a long time. But I wanted to get around to something here. And that is, when we were talking on yesterday's program about President Biden and sanctions and relations between, say, us and Russia and us and China, We are now not going to send a diplomatic delegation to next year's Beijing Winter Olympics, okay? And the Chinese said, well, you weren't invited anyway. What makes you think we care? Which is so very international relations seventh grade as to be almost laughable. But part of the reason we're doing that that diplomatic boycott is because of the Uyghurs.
Okay? The Uyghurs, right.
Right. So back, if you can remember the dim, dark mists of time back when Duck Doofus was a going concern on TLC or Discovery or one of those channels that used to actually have programming and then just turned into a nightmare of reality program about, programming about five-year-old beauty
what
pageants.
What the fuck is that about?
Well, but Duck Doofus was on there, and one of the Doofi declared, well, see, slavery wasn't as bad, wasn't all the time bad. There were some real happy slaves. That's why they was out there chopping cotton and singing and sugarcane and singing in the fields. Yeah, he said that.
Well, duh.
And, you know, of course, immediately, and it was great PR for him, but couldn't save him. Well, I got a story here, and it's a few days old. But I thought of it immediately. I thought of Duck Doofus immediately when I read it. A reporter asked Speaker Nancy Pelosi if the House would vote on a Senate bill that was aimed at curtailing forced labor in what they call the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, which is, I guess, where all the prison camps are. And responding, Speaker Pelosi said, I take second place to no one in Congress in my criticism of China's human rights record. I've even spoken to President Trump when he was at G20 in Japan a few years ago. I said, will you go up to the president of China and tell him that on the House and in the Senate, Democrats and Republicans have very serious concerns about what President Xi is doing to the Uyghurs? And then she reported, the next day he called me and said, I talked to the president, and he says the Uyghurs like being in those camps. They got three huts and a cot. They get to be among their own kind. I mean, you can. I'm making that part up. But I told President Xi, and President Xi said they like being in those camps.
Please.
Wow.
I mean, isn't that one of those, I don't know, if, Todd, let me ask you a question. When you heard Robin saying that, were you sitting here speechless as I was?
Yeah, you heard it quiet, I was, right?
Yeah.
I just...
but see, there's so much to that. They you know, if you've been following the Uyghurs, you know, they do their own thing. I mean, why wouldn't they? They're Mongolians, I believe. They're Muslim Mongolians. They don't, you know, they're doing their own thing. They're not fucking with that shit. So, like, leave us alone. Leave us alone. And yeah, I get that. I'm missing something here.
Hold it, Todd.
Let's go back to the basics.
Wait, Steve. What, Todd?
Okay, sorry.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, I believe that the ancestry, you know, they're Muslim, kind of, you know, they're really not even. I mean, they're so far
Central
out.
Central Asian.
I mean, right? They're Mongolian. You know, they're way out there. They're like Kazakhstan. You know, they're way out there. They're doing their thing. They're like, you know, not hippies, but they're horse people and shit. You know. Mm-hmm. They don't be fucking around with that shit. They don't give a fuck what they do in Beijing. Man, my God, how far is Beijing from where they live? And they're Muslim. They, you know, it's just, they don't fit into, you know, we got to understand China has a plan. That's the thing. And I'm not anti-Chinese. I'm just saying somebody has to have a plan. They got a fucking plan. And you talk about fascists, they're lockstep. They think like long game. I mean, we don't think as long as they think. Why do you think they're developing on the continent of Africa? They have a whole different mindset. And they need people to fall in line. And the Uyghurs are not falling in line, so off they go. And then maybe that's what we need to do with these fucking insurrectionist people.
We can't be them.
Well, I don't know. We need to get our boxcar Willie with these people. I'm telling you. When I was out today gathering provisions and such, I did some good shopping yesterday and today. I'm shopped out. I'm done. And I'm sending you some money in the next couple of days. But people are moving to this area because they want freedom. This shit is fucked up. And people come in. You know how many times times a week I have to hear people come in where I work and say, well, you know, and make all these assertions. My people were good. They're slaves, and they had work. Look at now. Look what's that's what they say. Look at what's going on now. They had work, and I just look at it, and I say, well, okay, you know, it depends on my mood. You know, it really depends on my mood. But sometimes I'll say, well, okay. Well, does it pass the golden test? I said, what is that? I said, well, would you be a slave? Well, I can't be a slave. I'm white. No. That is not the exercise. Would you choose to be a slave? And if so, why or why not? It's a very simple question with two parts. You know, you remember this from school, don't you?
School.
Yeah. So. That's what I'm fucking dealing with.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No worries. Hey, I got a note from Matt in San Francisco. Boosted and victorious. $100 towards the pot. It's been a good day. I got my booster this morning. Then this afternoon, I got the final word from Airbnb that they will be covering the full cost of damage that a guest caused to our Airstream 2 months ago. Spare the details, but I had to pull my best Joan Crawford, don't fuck with me, fellas, and three supervisors later for them to go from their first attempt at offering $5,000 to finally today covering $13,000, the complete cost of repair. Sometimes you just have to stand your ground, exercise your power, and not let the powers that be try to sell you short. Good on you, Matt. Good on you. Escalate. But...
That's right.
I don't ever want to be on the receiving end of your Joan Crawford, don't fuck with me, fellas. No, I don't want to. So thank you, though. Thank you so very much. That actually gets us off the schneid this evening and is very helpful. Let's see. Because of, you know, what we were talking about earlier, you know, I'm guessing Bitsy, mother of Edward, doesn't have that much to get in terms of a lawsuit. It's certainly not the fault of the property company that Bitsy and Edward, son of Bitsy, decided to channel their inner privilege. Yeah, what are you doing here? Let me see your ID. So they're probably, if they're not immune from suit, they're, you know, averse to it because there's not going to be a lot of judgment there. But a little coming out of here, Alabama. It took 5 years for her to get justice, but Leslie Nurse has been handed a jury verdict for $2.1 million against the Walton family of Benton, Arkansas, and Walmart Inc. Because she bought, in 2016, in Alabama, she was using the self-checkout system, which I hate. And the machine froze up. And she paid, you know, she paid for her items. And Walmart didn't believe her and falsely imprisoned her. You know, the Walmart security. And then the shoplifting case was dismissed, And then a Florida law firm engaged by those fine, fine folks, the Walton family and their corporation, started dunning hers, threatening to sue her if she didn't pay them a $200 settlement. The items she was accused of stealing weren't $200. And so she lawyered up, and the lawyers did their lawyering job, and they discovered that Walmart has a habit, at least in Alabama, of dunning people they have accused of theft to settle up civilly or risk lawsuit. And so she took the bastards to court.
Why is that?
Because they falsely imprisoned her. Walmart security did.
I mean, well, why does Walmart choose that
because
route,
because Walmart and other huge retail giants take advantage of laws in states that allow them to torment people. And over the 2-year period that her lawyers examined, they found out that in Alabama alone, or in the states that allow it to be done, not just Alabama, Walmart made hundreds of millions of dollars. That's why they do it. Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Hello?
Yeah, hundreds of millions of dollars for things that they didn't even deserve. And I brought in another caller here because I'm going to wrap up the program fairly quickly. Hey, who've I got? Is that you, Carl? Yo. Well, they rang in.
Hey, can I make a quick announcement for breaking news?
Yes.
Ohio State hired Oklahoma State's Jim Knowles as their new defensive coordinator.
Well,
he's pretty effing good.
Yeah, they had apparently something had to happen.
Yeah, something had to happen. Promise me this, Robin. Promise me that if you face those disgusting people from up there in that team up north, that you will crush them.
I have no power over that. I'm worried about sensitive.
Whoa! Even tell me this.
I know my awesome trans powers. Yes.
I was just going to say your awesome trans powers. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
But I have to focus my awesome trans powers right now on Cincinnati. You don't look past any opponent. So
especially one that finishes 13 or no.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Can I say something really quick? Okay. Then I'm going to actually step off here because this has been a great, Todd, thank you so very much. This has been one of my favorite conversations that I've heard on the horn in a while. And I thank you, Robin, and I thank you, Todd. I think this has been a good one. It's had some humor. It's had some seriousness.
Thank you,
it's had some... anything in between. And Todd, get your ass up here to New York sometime so we can, I don't know, go have, and you too, Robin, goddammit, so we can go have dumplings or Peking duck at a really good place in Chinatown that I know of. Or we can go to the one of my favorite restaurants. It's a good Korean restaurant called Unidentified Flying Chicken. They have a really good beer selection.
Well, Steve, I've enjoyed the conversation with you also. I really have.
Yeah, this was a good. What do you think,
and,
Robin?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I so thoroughly triggered you early on. I mean, you were sitting there working on dinner and everything, and I just shot everything right to shit.
Oh, I got to say one last thing. Sorry. Sorry.
It's okay.
I used my Wusthof knives again last night.
Can I say this really quick? I don't know how to say it appropriately, but
I'm sure you'll do
my
fine.
Friends Tracy and Jude and Tracy, you know,
two of the best people around. That's all I'm gonna say.
Cool. Yeah, I know. I agree. I did add.
Hello.
Is that you, Carl?
Carl.
Area code 413. Maybe I'm getting it wrong. Yo, you're on.
Didn't you hear someone?
Yeah, I'm connected.
Robin, is it somebody just popped up? Is it the Flagip? Did the Flagip plate screw up again?
Yeah, the Knutton valve may be completely blown out. But you're there and you're in the conversation. Jump in. Okay. So
It sounds like a blown Knutton valve. I don't know what else.
I don't know, but I am gonna roll because I found, you know, maybe it works out that I can do 3 hours, then I do two, then I do 3 hours, then I do two. But anyway, I've kind of reached the limit of my strength this evening, and
but you sound good. Well, I want to say that you sound. The last, I'll be honest with you, the last, and maybe Todd can concur in this. You sounded a little bit tired, and you sounded worn down the last couple nights, but you sound really good tonight.
Well, I was okay, and then I just start wearing, about the 2 hour mark is where I start wearing down for some reason.
Mm-hmm. But you haven't needed to get on the Cleopatra's barge.
The Cleopatra's barge just really doesn't. It doesn't work as well for me because I can't see what I'm working on and stuff like that. It's just a problem. All right, area code 413. You're back connected to the conversation. What's up?
Hi, Robin. Carl from Western Mass.
Yeah, I thought that was you, Carl.
Yeah, It's been hard getting you because our internet doesn't work, and I get a really crappy cell phone signal in my house for internet radio. So, but anyways, I get enough for a phone call, but not really data. But anyways, you were asking about who the hell would be committing a crime with you know, their badges and stuff on.
Yeah.
Are you on the FBI, you know, all the insurrectionist list? Can you pull that up on your computer?
No, not right now. I can't.
You can't? All right. Last, I think it was end of February or March, I looked at all those, pictures that they had from the insurrectionists. And this guy's number is 142. This guy walked in with his hard hat on into the Capitol. I called up, they had one picture of him. I called up the FBI, and he's like, "Well, do you have any information?" I'm like, "Yeah, the guy's got an ironworker insignia on the side of his hard hat. Got one on the front for his local number from local 33. And he had one on the right-hand side of his hard hat." And the guy said, there's something else. He's probably German. The guy says, "Well, how would you know that?" I said, "Well, he's got a German, it looks like a blurred German insignia eagle sticker on the left side of his hard hat." "Oh. What did you know? They finally got him." But after they got him, they posted all these other pictures on where he has sunglasses on, and you could tell it's the same person because of the hard hat. But he also has his glasses off with his eyes open. It's kind of weird that they just posted these after. I mean, I thought they got all the data they got. You know, it's kind of weird.
That is odd.
It's just like after they.
But consider a couple. You know, a few nights ago we had the story of Finger Man. The guy who was identified by the fact that he has to, he had to tattoo the word fuck on, onto his middle left finger, his bird flipping finger. And.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
This is a dumb one.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, an interesting lot. We had so much fun with Finger Man, imagining that his little pinky finger was tattooed with the word boogers. and his index finger was tattooed with the word butt.
Wait, hold on. Did he have one finger that had a very long fingernail?
Don't know if he had the party nail. Don't know.
Well, that was an 80s thing. So.
Yes. Yeah, when McDonald's pulled the little Coke spoons. Mm-hmm.
God. I'm glad I never got to really get into Coke.
Hey, Carl, you're not talking about the people with the long fingernails sniffing Coke, are you?
No. I know too many of them. Some of them are dead, so.
I was just curious.
Know enough people like that. One guy I used to work with, he retired. He was a pile driver. He retired right around. He's only he's 2 or 3 months younger than me, and I'm 56. He retired because he's a pile driver. He works hard. He had a hard job. It is a hard job. Really smart guy, but so fucking feminist and so racist. This guy, you're working in Boston and he's just using the N-word and just calling, somebody, that's a dyke, back and forth, just bullshit. And I've known him for 20-something years. Last time I worked with him, he was a foreman on a job. We were working in New Hampshire, and he was just like downplaying COVID. You got the shot. I ain't going to get the shot, blah, blah, blah. A friend of mine called me up Friday. He retired. He was on his boat because he lives out in their North Shore, right on the water, pretty much, north of Boston, where the fishing's good. So nice cold water out there. And he's like, well, retiring, blah, blah, blah. Da, da, da. He's got two daughters. I can't understand why he's so feminist, but.
I think you mean misogynist. That's not a feminist. That's a misogynist.
Excuse me. And they're like just out of high school, 18 to 22, somewhere in there, two of them. And then he's got his wife. He was hospitalized. He went fishing with two other guys that he used to work with, so he shut two jobs down, and they were fishing, and he came up really, really sick. They were out on the coast, probably 100 miles out. He's an old lobster fisherman and stuff, and tuna, and they're probably way out. He gets really sick. He had to be intubated for 3 weeks, and then he was in the hospital another 2 or 3 weeks, and now he's at home on 24/7 oxygen.
Oh, Jesus.
Damn. And 56 years old, just retired. Early retirement. His wife's a teacher. I don't understand how she put up with him. But, I mean, it's like, all right, hopefully you still had your insurance,
God, in
those places up there. I'm sure he did. He's a smart guy. He's a wicked smart guy. But, I mean, it's just one of those things.
What?
He made fun of it last year, and now it's fucked them over.
People aren't the same after they've been intubated, because for many, many people, you lose some brain cells. You lose.
In point of fact, I'm very fortunate to be the beneficiary of a lot of good and wise counsel from women who have been through the same sort of surgery I went through. And they told me to be on the lookout. They said there's something weird that happens to you when you're intubated. And a month out, 2 months out, 3 months out, you can be hit by a wave of depression. And no particular reason for it. Just bang, there it is. So, mm-hmm. so I'm keeping, you know, I'm keeping a weather eye on it.
What do you mean? You were intubated for your procedure?
Oh yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, they do that.
Oh. Well.
And I had okay. I had a hell of a sore throat for a couple of days. From it.
Well, they hustle up. That, I mean, they do that shit as fast as they can. Like that's some ICU shit. You know, when you're intubated, you're pretty much on the edge.
They got me off of it quick as they could too, because of course there were drugs involved that suppress the respiratory system, and that's part of why you do it, I think.
Right.
But they
propofol.
Yeah, propofol, otherwise known as milk of amnesia.
Yep.
And
that's some good shit, though.
The last thing I remember was getting my spinal. I was face down in a foam rubber support, and they were playing around with a sonogram machine on my spine trying to find the right place to put it in, and then gone. And then the next thing I know, I had no knowledge of the passage of time, and I woke up and I knew I was awake because I was in agony. And it was awful. And they got that calmed down enough, and then eventually they took me to my room where I got misgendered all over the place for a while. And
yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's messed up.
Well, I hope they'll work on it. Listen, guys, it's great to hear from both of you. I had a note from our dear friend Jude, who sent along something. I fall for raw conversation, those in which I know the person is not playing, not pretending to be someone they aren't. I fall for carefree, inadvertent smiles. Now, I don't know why that just crashed, but it did, and restore. I fall for carefree, inadvertent smiles, those which aren't intended to impress another. I fall for what is real. I fall for souls, not the skin carrying it. What a lovely, lovely sentiment. And Todd, Tracy wants me to let you know that she said, talk about awesome powers. Guess who got a personal phone call from the dean?
Damn Skippy.
Yep.
Tracy, that's a beautiful man.
Tracy ain't playing. So I'm out of here, guys. I appreciate the conversation immensely. I enjoyed it. Carl, good to hear from you. Please stay safe. Sorry you've got crummy signal. But it's awful good to hear from you. And you know, you just do everything you can to make sure that you're okay and the people you love. And Todd, thank you. Like I said before, thank you so much for being part of the conversation. Sorry about the triggering. And thank all of y'all for joining in the conversation. Thank you so much, Matt in San Francisco. Boosted and victorious. Proud and happy for you. Back tomorrow, of course. Well, thanks to all of you who keep this program on the air. Thank you. To our Patreon and PayPal subscribers, thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you, Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch. CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to please co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It means the world to Appalachia. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine, get your booster. Keep washing your hands. Keep not touching your face. Keep using your hand sanitizer. Keep wearing your mask. Keep maintaining your social distance. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes toward you saying, "I demand to see your ID," Why are you in my parking garage? We live here. Avoid that person like the plague. Because they are. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.